So welcome to the Cloud Design Box podcast. With me today is Martin Edworthy. He's the e-learning coordinator at Sacred Heart High School. Hi, Martin. How are you?
Hi, Darren. I'm good, thanks.
And last summer, you moved from one office 365 tenant for your school into a centralized tenancy for your trust, didn't you? What were the reasons for that move?
Yeah, so there were two key things, really. One was that it was becoming something that seemed obvious to do. A number of our members of staff within school had responsibilities within the trust. So, for instance, one of our assistant head teachers was largely responsible for the trust website and trust SharePoint, getting people access to it while we were still in our own SharePoint tenancy. So those users had two accounts, they were having to work between those two tenancies, and one of our other schools in the trust was already having their SharePoint within the trust tenancy. So it started to seem like something that might be worth doing from that point of view. So we sought some advice from Aspira about how it might look if we went about that process, and we received some advice in terms of managing users across the trust, that there might be certain advantages to that. It seemed like it would suit our needs in that sense. So to that end, we decided to hopefully make life easier in the long run, basically. Essentially, that's what it boiled down to, is making life easier in the long run. Ultimately, as the trust grows, the more access different teachers, different members of staff in each school that join the trust have to the trust resources with the minimum amount of effort, the better.
That's right. It's certainly a lot easier, isn't it? If everybody's in that same tenant, you can all be in different domains locally in your own schools, but in terms of the tenant, if you're all in the same tenant, collaboration, communication, it is just easier, and you get to do, you know, very cool things like collaborate within teams with similar people in different schools. So you get all your English teachers together, you get all your, you know, if it's a primary context, then you get kind of all your year three teachers together, and they can collaborate one account, and you don't have to do any complicated guest stuff, because they're not guests, they're actually just all in the same tenant. Yeah. You're all home, you're all in the same family.
I mean, that was sort of one of the key things we were thinking about, was getting members of staff in different schools access to the trust sites within their own SharePoint experience, so not having to go away and do something different and log in with a different account or follow a different web address. Just be able to navigate in the same structure between what they consider theirs in their school context and what's considered the trust context. And actually, it's interesting you say the if it's a group of primary school teachers, for example, that's one of the things that we were beginning to use before the migration in the trust, was sharing primary resources. There was a subsite within the trust. So that, again, was sort of something that was indicating that this might be something worth doing.
Yeah, good. And it's that single sign-on story as well, isn't it? Nobody wants to have two usernames and passwords, and have to, you know, remembering one's hard enough. So the idea that you'd have to kind of, you know, log in to your own schools and then to access trust resources and do collaboration at that level, you'd need to have a different password. Obviously, it would be very unhelpful. So within Sacred Heart, you already had quite a lot of resources, documents within SharePoint and Teams. So what were you using those for before you did the migration, and how did that feed into the migration? Did that cause any problems for you?
We'd been using SharePoint for a good few years. We'd had Office 365 accounts for longer than that. We sort of progressively moved our staff into that space, first of all by offering OneDrive as a solution for their own personal documents. And then following on from that move to OneDrive, we gradually moved towards all of the departmental resources that had previously been on local network storage and moving them into SharePoint. So in essence, this is our second thing we've called a migration. because we migrated from network storage to SharePoint. And when that migration happened, we did draw a line in the sand, and the teacher's drive from the network, the old T drive, I think most schools have it, have had a T drive.
It's always a T drive.
Yeah. Drew a line in the sand and said, look, that's read-only now. And that was sort of the key step in terms of encouraging that final raft of adoption into Office 365 and SharePoint and OneDrive. So prior to this migration, in terms of teaching and learning and subject resources, they were in SharePoint. That was the bottom line. We did still have, or we still do have, some local network storage for some specific cases. You know, there's certain members of support staff that don't really need to be working online. They don't need access to files off-site. So, you know, the office and admin have tended to be maintained as network drives. But in terms of teaching staff have for a couple of years gone to SharePoint, and everything that's done in terms of shared planning within subjects is all there on those, or was all there on those existing SharePoint subject sites.
So I remember when we met, I remember thinking this is not quite the same as a lot of our customers, because a lot of our customers start in that position where they've got things on the T drive and the S drive. And the migration is kind of an upload, really, into SharePoint. There might be some stuff over in OneDrive that needs moving across as well. But I remember thinking for you, well, these guys have already got stuff in SharePoint, which is the right place for it. They've already got some stuff in Teams, which is the right place for it. This is going to be kind of a sideways migration that comes across. So what was the process for doing that migration, and did you have any help, or were there any specific tools?
The process of the migration, initially we had a meeting with yourselves to discuss what our structure was going to look like, and that, I mean, immediately that meeting was a little bit of an initial learning curve in terms of getting your heads around the difference in the structure. And it did seem a little bit alien at first from where we were coming from. We were coming from a very hierarchical system of top level sites and then sub sites working your way down, which when we went into SharePoint was the way things were done. It was quite difficult initially, in all honesty, as we had those initial discussions and that planning, to imagine how you go from managing the way the permissions and the structure in the way that you're used to moving to the new way, the flatter structure, and how that works. So that initial meeting sort of gave us that initial, we need to sort of get our heads around what this new structure is going to look like. Following on from that, the actual technicalities of the migration were done between yourselves at Cloud Design Box and colleagues at Aspira, in terms of matching up what we had with where it was going to go. And that was quite a challenge. It required quite a bit of time and quite a bit of thinking about how are we going to get the content across to locations that are going to match up easily for staff when they come back to the new system, and making sure that everything in the old tenant had a home in the new tenant and somewhere to go. Also, somewhere to go that made sense in terms of permissions. As I say, you know, we're coming from the older style of hierarchical structure. We had gone down an avenue where we maybe hadn't managed permissions in the best way all of the time. So there were some issues in terms of taking a file structure where the permissions were almost difficult to identify, and then make sure that we put something in place in the new system that gave the same people access, but in a more manageable way.
Yeah. So our recommendation is always, in terms of SharePoint permissions, not to put individuals in, because that gets very, very, very messy. And as you say, it's really difficult to know with any confidence exactly who's got access to a particular piece of content. So we recommended using groups. So you can create some groups, security groups, obviously not distribution lists. And that might be groups like, you know, all staff, all students, might have been more specific groups like, you know, senior leadership team or something. And I think the other thing we looked at, which might have been quite new for you, was the idea that if you make a team, the membership of that team can be kind of treated like a group. So, yeah. So if you create a senior leadership team, and it is literally a team, then you can take the senior leadership team members as a block of people in a group, and you can use those in SharePoint permissions, which means you're not having to manage kind of, well, security groups, and we kind of also use them as distribution lists, but then we also want a team. It allows you to make one group and manage the membership of that group and reuse it for different purposes. Obviously, it's used as a team, and you know all the stuff you do in teams, discussions and sharing files and things, but also you use it perhaps in what we've called the communication sites, which is where you define who's allowed to post news items. And obviously, you know, SLT might be allowed to post news items on the school homepage. I imagine that also felt quite alien, that idea of, well, so we're using Teams in SharePoint.
Yeah, the shift in how permissions were being managed did seem alien. And it took a little bit of time just to get our heads around it, really. I'll be honest, initially it seemed a little bit, is this worth it? Is this feels like quite a lot of work in terms of just changing our mindset.
Yep.
Not necessarily more work in terms of what you actually have to do for the management of permissions, but just going from this is how we do things to learning a new way of doing things did seem like a little bit of a leap. It did take a little while to appreciate what the benefits of that were in terms of, you know, as you're saying, being able to then use those groups for other purposes within permissions if you need to. Once you do start to do that, once you get into the workflow of we need these people to have access to these documents, but these people don't for whatever purpose it is, then once you get into that workflow of, right, I need to go to the portal, I need to do it in this way, this is how I'm setting up the team, it does start to make sense. And then moving forward, as those permissions need to change, so for instance, one of the things that we set up was an extracurricular site, which is readable across all users, but has a limited number of authors. If you know, an extra music teacher needs to be able to go in and change something, it's just a case of dropping them into the appropriate team, and then they've got access to do that. Whereas previously, it would have been a case of, right, I need to drill so far down the structure and pick the appropriate level to add this person. And that's not to say that our permissions were not working. Yeah. Much of the time the way they were supposed to. We were using the all staff groups, and we were using science groups and student groups, but when it came to a slightly more bespoke, this particular set of files need to be accessed by everybody but edited by this particular narrow group, then we did tend to break permissions at some level and add those users in. One thing that, you know, if somebody was watching this and is about to go through this process or is thinking about this process, I think the key thing that I sort of learned in the initial phase was just keep track of what you're doing. You know, in terms of the groups that you create, keep track of whether it's being created as a team, whether it's being created as a security group, who the members are and what the purpose of that was, and just tracking that so that when you go back to add another member, you can just sort of double check. Yeah, that's what I did there. That was the group that was serving this purpose, and drop them in.
Absolutely. I seem to remember you had kind of a big spreadsheet with all that kind of planning on.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you shared that with us, and we'd look at it and go, well, yeah, that looks right. But actually, are you sure you need to make a group for this? Because, you know, if you made that as a team, then you'd have a team and those people would have a place to talk to each other as well, rather than you making a team separately.
Yeah. I mean, certainly during the process of that mapping spreadsheet, there were certain elements where it was quite easy to identify this is the source, this is the target. But there were certainly, you know, as you say, when we shared that with you, there was certainly a lot of question marks and color coding as to, well, we're not really sure from where we're coming from and where we're going. What is the solution to this? Where should this be living? Where should these be resources be accessed, and how will it be best to manage the permissions of those?
Yeah, it really challenges you to think about, well, who does need read access to this, and who does need edit access to this? Because what I've seen, for example, in a lot of places, if you're into the team's way of working, I've seen kind of a whole staff team, you know, all teachers are in there, 150 teachers in the staff team. And of course, as members of a team, you've all got edit access. Yeah. And that's potentially quite dangerous, because it only takes one person to go, what's all this stuff in my team, and delete it. And we've seen it happen, which is why we do teams. We recommend having small teams. You know, the data team might just have one or two people in. The HR team might just have one person in. But yeah, that person still deserves a team for their role, rather than putting that stuff in their OneDrive, and you know, it's very difficult to share in a sensible way. It's this difference between your communication sites, SharePoint communication sites, like the extracurricular site that you mentioned, which is a wide audience site, most people are readers, and then maybe you just add a group of editors to that, a very small number of people. And in an ideal world, so that you don't take two groups into the shower, you actually make that as a team, and then you can and of course that team gets reused. If you've got an SLT leaders team,
yeah,
the chances are you're probably going to give them edit access to your policy site and the extracurricular site and the main staff site, just so they can kind of inject things into all those different places.
Yeah.
Rather than making a group called something like extracurricular editors group, which would also work, but it's not really very reusable in terms of roles. So I would say, actually, before you think about sites, think about people. Think about the different roles that you've got, you know, HR, senior leadership, pastoral care people, you know, all those different roles within the school. Some of those roles might cross over, and let that define the teams that you make, and yeah, then let those teams kind of almost drive which communication sites you need based on who needs to put content where and when. And you've done this in an IT way beautifully using spreadsheets. That certainly worked for you. I would also say just get a really big piece of paper and a lot of post-its.
It would have been a very big piece of paper.
Code it. And then bits of string. It'll end up like an episode of CSI in the end, because you'll see all these bits of string connecting things up. And that's exactly the way to do it. So it sounds like that's gone really well for you. And it was a big job, right? Because you had all your users moving. Then you had to move your content. But before you could move your content, we had to create the empty structures with all the permissions ready. And that was the other thing I think was different, because if you're using tools like ShareGate, which is what Aspira Cloud uses, and ShareGate is arguably the best tool on the block, what a lot of people do is they'll just move the whole site. I'll take this site from here to there. Boom, 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 we've migrated that. But yeah, all you've actually done is kind of shunted things to the left without changing them. But it sounds like you really took the opportunity to transform things as they were coming across. You took the opportunity to reimagine the way that things would work, and the permissions and the roles.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the structure, it is quite different. And if you were to map that migration out on paper and with bits of string, there will be a lot of crisscrossing pieces of string. Yeah. And I think ultimately you actually end up in a place that makes more sense. So if I think now from a student's point of view, when a student goes into SharePoint, they just see the list of the subjects that they take. They don't need to pick their year group first, because that's already taken care of in terms of the permissions. They're just going in and they're going, right, today I'm looking for my English work, they go to English. Yeah. Our previous structure, the hierarchical way that it was set up, had, you know, our whole school site split then into teachers and students, and then within students split into year group, and then within each year group, every subject. So you had this duplication of every subject in every year group. And also from a from the staff point of view, if you're then working with those files, you're having to go into each year group first and drill down to your subject. And again, as we log into SharePoint now, we go to our subject. That's our first point of call, is our subject, which makes sense. So although it's quite different, and you know, initially when we came back in the September after the migration, a lot of staff were presented with something that looked very different and felt very different, and therefore maybe just initially seemed, again, you know, use that word alien in terms of, well, where am I going here? But actually, once you get into it and up and running with it, it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, so not everybody will have this, and there are different ways of doing navigation. In our product, we've got the mega menu, and the mega menu is just, it's just there. And it makes it super easy to get to the right places. But there are other ways of doing that. If you've, you know, if you don't have the Cloud Design Box product, you could use hub sites or links. And yeah, there are other ways. Perhaps you could kind of put that together yourself. So in terms of just Office 365 generally, or Microsoft 365, do you think it's as easy for students to use as other platforms? Because I know, you know, obviously there are other VLEs and other kind of systems out there, and some of them with some really good feature sets. But in terms of kind of that basic sort of accessing resources, doing collaboration, doing teaching and learning, extending the classroom, does that come to them quite easily using Microsoft 365?
I think it does in many of the key ways. Particularly once they've had an opportunity to do it once, then it's easy for them to replicate and know what they're doing. And once they've accessed something in one subject, then they can access that in another subject. I mean, certainly, as I say, we've been using SharePoint for a few years before moving to a Cloud Design Box system. So our previous knowledge of VLEs is a little bit out of date, but certainly from our prior experience of a VLE, Microsoft 365 offers a much, much easier way to work with files and resources in general. Certainly our previous experience had been very much, the VLE served as a quite static copy of resources. And right. What would happen in a lot of cases would be the resources would be being updated, changed, and then there would be quite a bit of lag before the VLE would reflect those.
Right. So your master copy was still that T drive or the S drive content, still the network share. That's where the master lives. So you make changes to that, and then somebody goes, oh, has anybody pushed this up to the VLE? And whereas with Microsoft 365, the cloud becomes the new master. That is the main and the only version of the truth for that document. So you change it once and it's instantly in the mix. And I know that with what we do, we've got the centralized subject areas, the centralized resource sites. If you as a teacher or a head of department change a document up there, that's immediately available for students and their parents to look at and see what's going on, helping out with lost learning and all that kind of thing, because people can just work independently. And plus, of course, that connects in with the class site or the class teams, because within your class team, you've then got a tab connecting to that, or you can set assignments in class teams where you can, as a teacher, reach out and use those centralized resources for those assignments. So you're not kind of hunting off everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the key things. I was quite, when we initially had some of the demonstrations of the systems, that was one of the things that caught my eye immediately, was the ability in assignments to pull those resources and attach them straight away, rather than going, oh, I want this file, or it lives in SharePoint. Teams can't quite find SharePoint at the minute in the old system. And then having to go to SharePoint and either move it to my OneDrive, which I could go and pull things from, or download it and re-upload it to the team. So just being able to see, right, well, that's where the resources live, and if I want to attach it, I'll be able to get to it, even though it's in SharePoint. The team's assignments can see that. It's certainly been particularly useful for us. And I think that to some degree makes it easier for students as well, because we're dealing with the same set of resources, whether it's resources that we're just directing them to on SharePoint or whether it's resources that we're using in assignments. It's all from the same pool.
Yeah. So sometimes it's a case of emphasis or promotion is how much you want to promote a particular resource. So it's there anyway. So if students want to go back and look at something and revise something they did in previous years, it's there. If they want to look sideways at other work that's not been assigned to them, but they want to read around a particular topic and learn a bit more about it based on their needs and interests, they can. And they might even, up to a certain extent, be able to look forward a little bit and say, well, actually, I can see we're doing this in a couple of weeks' time. I'm going to prep for this. And you could even do that formally and call it flipped learning and get the students going in and doing that stuff early. And then when they come to the lesson, it's not the teacher bringing the learning, it's the students bringing the learning. The teacher's just, you know, drinking coffee going, this is brilliant, guys, keep it going. Because they've got that independence.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that has happened a little bit. One or two of my keen students have seen something before I've delivered it to them. Sometimes they've done the work that I'm trying to get them to do that lesson, which puts you on the back foot a little bit. But it's great to see when it does happen.
Terrible, right? I've had that question asked a lot. You know, well, if you put all this stuff, you know, if year eight can see all the year eight stuff, what happens if, you know, they do some learning without me? I was like, well, that's great. That's what you want. Because there's always more learning. You know, if students do get that stuff early and they've got it right, obviously if they've not got it right, you've got to loop back around and help them do it correctly. But if they do happen to learn something without you, you've always got stuff in your back pocket that you can give as an extension activity. And that's one of the other things about the sharing, is that if it's not just you as a teacher, but if it's multiple teachers in the same department, the chances of you having some fully differentiated resources that one of you has made and you've all put them into the pot together, you can just find that other thing. You can say, oh, yeah, I've got another resource for you here, you know, and that's what happens with you. You're extremely keen or you're gifted students, is you give them something extra to do from that pot.
Yeah, it's not a bad problem to have.
It's not. But it's that thing. It kind of moves you from being kind of a, you know, teacher to maybe education facilitator. Should we say? Yeah, that idea that, you know, all the students are motivated and actually you're just there to guide them and steer them and support them. But fundamentally, in some ways, they're in charge of their own learning. I mean, that's a continuum, right? Obviously, you'll see more of that in the sixth forms. Where you know, students are starting to get a bit more independent. You probably won't see that so much with year seven, because it's questions all the time.
It's something in a sense we've been pushing for, and with lost learning and catch up, and even now, you know, we've got students who are having to isolate positive cases, and we've very much tried to, although we're supporting the students with direction from staff wherever possible, we're trying to make sure that the students are aware of where they are at, so that if they are off on Monday, you know, they've been in today, but they're off on Monday, they can just get up and running straight away and know, if I go to SharePoint, whatever lesson I've got, lesson one, I've got maths lesson one. If I go to maths, I know what topic I'm doing. I know what lesson I was on to last lesson, and we're trying to make it really clear and explicit to the students through learning journeys where we're at lesson by lesson, and particularly linking that in with SharePoint and having those resources there. So in theory, the students actually wouldn't need any direction in order to continue. They just, as I say, go to maths, go to topic three, go to lesson five. That's where they're up to, and the resources are there for them. I mean, we're trying to support them at the same time and give them direction and have that contact as well. But in the sort of case where you might have some students are missing a lesson, that happens that their teacher is also missing that lesson, possibly isolating as well. It just means that if that communication doesn't happen immediately, the students can get on and get something done.
Yeah, they can do some work. Realistically, it might not always be the work they would have done in that lesson, because maybe that needed a teacher to come in and do a presentation stage and, you know, get the ball rolling. but they can certainly consolidate what they did last lesson. They can do some stuff around it, and they can do preparation so that there's maybe still some loss, some slippage, but it's much less than it would have been. And I think students are used to, they're getting used to working more independently, because during the lockdown periods, they did have to work at home on their own with support from their parents very often. So the parents are starting to get used to this idea of, I'm thinking about my son, so what's a number bond? What's this number bond? We didn't do it like this in my day. But the parents and the children can actually start to do that. That's a continuum, right? Because they're not going to be able to do it right away. We've got to teach that kind of autonomy and independence. But we've almost stumbled onto it by accident. And I really hope we kind of grab hold of that now and keep doing it, because it's great. Because when those kids leave school, or they move on to further education or whatever, or they go into the world of work, it would be a really useful skill for them to have, to be able to plan their own learning. And I think that those words you used, the learning journeys, I think that's so important, that students, they don't just turn up today and go, right, what am I doing today? Okay, thank you, get on with that. They can see where they've been, they can see where they're going, and it kind of perhaps opens up that concept of the project-based learning, where you say, right, in 3 weeks' time, we want to be in a position where you're delivering this project, you're making this, a presentation, or you're creating something in Scratch, or whatever it is. And in order for you to achieve that in 3 weeks' time, working back from that, these are the things that you need to be able to achieve as individual steps to work you towards that end goal. And just making all the resources available just makes that easier.
Yeah, I mean, it was in terms of what we're experiencing now with students being off, it's been a bit of a happy coincidence that we were moving in that direction of embedding learning journeys across the curriculum. So it's something that we were doing anyway. So then it made sense to marry up the resources we were putting into SharePoint for catch up and make sure that they aligned with the learning journeys, just to make that connection. So it worked quite well for us that we were doing that anyway, and then could link that in and run the learning journey and what's on SharePoint in parallel quite nicely.
Yeah, but of course it's not just, there you are kids, see you at Christmas. There's lots of intervention by teachers, obviously physically in the classroom, but if you are on a Teams kind of situation, you're doing live lessons, then I guess you can just have students contacting teachers at specific times, agreed times, and saying, I'll be in the lesson. If you get stuck with this, then come and get some help. What about, because you've made some massive changes, what about the folks involved in that in terms of leadership and the migration roles, which different people were involved in that? Was it just an IT thing, or did the teachers need to be involved, or heads of department?
In terms of the migration, it was quite an IT thing. The migration was something that we perhaps didn't fully grasp the scale of quickly enough. And partly for that reason, it fell to sort of the IT team and myself and our assistant head who leads on IT to make decisions in terms of, this is where we think this is going to be best placed. I think we probably would have arrived at the same decisions in the long run. It might have been nice to have a little bit more of a lead in with staff in terms of what that was going to look like. I think we just didn't properly appreciate what the process was in terms of going from the hierarchical to the flatter system, and it's not until you really start thinking about it and actually start putting pen to paper, or one row to the next row in the spreadsheet, and linking things up, that you start realizing, oh, actually, there is a fair bit to this. And as I say, the crossover, as you change from one structure to the other, it would have been nice maybe to have the lead in for staff in that they were getting that appreciation. But as I say, we didn't quite realise the extent of that process in order to realise, oh, we maybe do need to have a bit more of a lead in with staff and maybe through HODs in terms of, well, this is what it's going to look like. I think probably in 90% of the cases from subject to subject, it was relatively straightforward. It was maybe the subject where you're talking about modern foreign languages. So you've got a department, but within yeah. that you've got subjects, science. You've got a department, you've got science happening, yep. and you've got science teachers who are teaching science, but then you've got physics teachers who are teaching physics and chemistry teachers who are teaching chemistry and so forth. Yeah. And then you've got, maybe got applied science as well. That was where maybe a little bit more consultation may have just helped smooth things over a little bit. You know, for instance, our MFL department were very much used to working as the MFL department.
Yeah.
And their SharePoint structure previously in the old tenant was very much modern foreign languages. Yeah. Going into the new system, obviously all of the groups come from the timetable. You've got French, you've got Spanish. That's quite a shift in terms of how they're going to be working with their files and how the students are going to be accessing files.
Yeah. Yeah, especially the students. I think one of the changes I seek to elicit is refocusing on the students rather than the staff. And this is if you're teaching a lesson in a classroom, when you're writing your lesson plan, one of the things I was always taught was, right, who's doing what and when. Who's it for? So, right, okay, teachers will be doing this. That's fine. I'll do this. But it's not about you as the teacher. It's right. What? And I am a language teacher. So it's like, what activities are happening for the students? Is it student conversation? Are the students writing in their books? Are the students listening to a tape? So in that lesson plan, you're really thinking about that student experience, and the staff, you kind of just have to make that happen. It's not so much about what you're doing. And I think maybe that is the difference when you're kind of a newly formed, you know, NQT, you're thinking, what am I doing? And then kind of a couple of years in, something clicks and you realize, oh yeah, it's about what they're doing. And I think it's the same with the resources. If you're a student studying French, your view is not, oh, I'm doing MFL now. I'm like, no, you're not, you're doing French.
Yeah.
You know, I've got French today. They don't necessarily even know who the head of department is for modern languages. And the same with science in many cases, you know, physics, chemistry, biology, they're separate subjects, but they're part of a department. So just the way that we tend to deal with that is we create those student facing areas, and those are based on subjects. So, you know, French, Spanish, Mandarin, they'll be separate subjects the students see. But then we also create these kind of staff department teams, and that might be called MFL staff, and that might be called humanities staff or science staff, and it's helping colleagues understand that actually both those things are different. There are spaces where the students pick up resources, and then there are places where members of staff talk about stuff and plan things, and that's where you keep your mark books and bits and pieces.
So
as you're trying to kind of identify your champions for this, and I know you would already have had some champions before this whole sort of project happened, what tools were you using to help you understand who was doing a lot with Microsoft 365 and perhaps who needed a bit more support and who could be your champions because they were, you know, running with the ball?
I think previously in the old system, it was very much a case of the things that we were offering to staff in terms of the tools available in Microsoft 365 were opt-in, with the exception of keeping your resources on SharePoint. You know, we obviously made that distinction that resources are accessed through SharePoint. The use of Teams was, you know, regularly over a couple of years demonstrated to staff at different times, but it was up to those members of staff if they felt they would get the benefit out of those teams. It's been interesting since we moved to the Cloud Design Box, and some of the meetings we've had with colleagues. You know, I met with Tracy a couple of weeks ago to look at the tools to actually identify what is happening and what the numbers are like in terms of subjects that are using teams that are being accessed, assignments that are being set, and that's been really useful just to see what is happening and how powerful those tools are in terms of looking at those analytics and seeing the departments that are really making use of assignments. And it's quite easy to pick out, and it's quite easy working with lots of members of staff and knowing sort of who does what in the different departments. You can quite easily go, oh yeah, I know who that'll be, without having to drill down any further. And identify those people. I think that's something that we're conscious of continuing to build on. It's been something that we've not been particularly keen to enforce on staff too much. I mean, obviously Teams got huge usage during the lockdowns when everybody was working from home and staff were delivering live lessons from home. Teams became very much heavily used because everybody was accessing their work, whatever they were doing, whatever work they were doing, they were accessing it through a device. But as soon as you come back into school and the students aren't using devices lesson by lesson, you know, they've got an exercise book in front of them in most lessons. We have then shifted, you know, away from Teams a little bit. Quite a few departments looking at those numbers are continuing to use assignments, which is really pleasing to see. And there's at least some assignment usage across most subjects, even if it's not heavily used consistently from class to class. There's still people in each subject making use of that. So it hasn't just disappeared. It's still there and it's still an option. It's something we're always keen to encourage. And I think looking at those numbers with Tracy, it's been quite easy to identify where we would go to find those people to then help spread the positives of those tools.
Yeah, so just a note for the folks at home, that's part of the Cloud Design Box product. So we've got an assignment dashboard that lets you see which teachers have set which assignments and view that by subject and drill down, and there are graphs and charts, and it's beautiful. Plus, we've got tools that let you see what storage is being used for each subject, so you can kind of see how often things are being edited and updated and refined. But I mean, without the Cloud Design Box product, you could still do some of that. It might take a bit longer because you'd have to canvas people and perhaps send out forms to teachers to ask them how much they're doing it, or ask the kids, you know, which of your subjects are setting the most. So we just make those available. And plus, you've got things like Insights as well, of course. Every teacher, and this is just free with Microsoft, you've got Insights for classes where you can see the activities of students and how they're getting their assignments done. And that's a really powerful thing for every teacher. And then if you pay a bit more, you get Insights for Leaders, which is more of a kind of centralized thing across a school or across a trust even, that you get to see the big data. Those are certainly things you can do anyway in your tenant, even without us. What about, because you mentioned kind of students at home doing a lot of work during the lockdowns. What was the story about devices there? How did you cope with students needing to have devices in order to do the work?
Well, in the initial lockdown, which obviously worked quite differently, was a little bit more of a surprise. Obviously we kind of sensed something might be coming, but we weren't exactly sure what was happening. And then all of a sudden we were working from home. As a school, and I can't take any credit for that. It was very much our assistant head who leads on IT, Michael, who had the responsibility of figuring out which students had access, which students didn't have access, and getting the devices in through school to get to those students. And then making sure, sort of as we came back to school and then had the subsequent lockdown, that everybody, staff and students alike, were in a position to do more in terms of, with the second lockdown, being able to do live content delivery in an effective way. which is something we didn't go for in that first initial lockdown. We did more of it as it progressed and started doing bits and pieces with sixth form, but it wasn't something that we just jumped into, which I think was, it certainly felt to me like the right thing. You know, I know colleagues elsewhere who very, very early on, without very much running at all, were just like, go and do this live teaching thing.
8 hours a day.
Yeah, and I don't know how effectively you can do that from, you know, going from 0 to 100 miles an hour with it, how effective that could really be. But our process through that first lockdown was to start thinking, well, you know, if we're in this situation for longer, if it continues or happens again, how are we going to deal with it? And then starting to try out live delivery so that we could then go, right, well, this is what's worked, this is what hasn't worked, this is what we need to get out to staff in terms of training. And certainly when we came back to school in the September between the lockdowns, you know, we offered all our staff training on delivering live lessons so that if, and obviously it did happen, if it happens, we'd be in a position to much more quickly get up and running with live lessons. And obviously the devices played a key part in that, in everybody having that device at home to be able to access that.
Right. Well, Martin, thanks very much for joining us today. It's been really interesting. We've covered a lot of ground. And hopefully we'll get you back on to talk about your continued progress in a little while.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.